Contentment is wealth. That line, which is in the 33rd chapter of the Tao Te Ching, is often rendered that way. Sometimes it is, he who knows he has enough is rich. And it brings to mind, of course, those words by William Henry Channing. I say that, of course it brings to mind those words by William Henry Channing, but maybe it's only us ministers who think that way. To admit, I first preached this sermon, a version of the sermon, at the ordination of David Kramer in Rochester, Minnesota. David was our intern minister a couple years ago, and many of you know him well. He preached here earlier this summer, and he used to be a newspaper editor, and he loves to kayak. Remember those two things, because that'll matter later. But I started with this observation to welcome David to the weird club of ministry. Of course, it makes me think of an obscure 19th century transcendentalist. Of course it does. William Henry Channing. You may not know the name William Henry Channing, but you may know these words. To live content with small means, to seek elegance rather than luxury, refinement rather than fashion, to be worthy, not respectable, and wealthy, not rich, to let the spiritual, unbidden and unconscious, grow up through the common. This is to be my symphony. This is my symphony. Those beautiful words, I think. More than 200 years ago, William Henry Channing's uncle, William Ellery Channing, the leader and the prime founder of the Unitarian movement in this country, expressed this symphony, this longing for a life of quality and contentment, as salvation by character. We were saved, said Channing, by how we lived our lives. Not through the Protestant salvation by faith, by believing certain things about Jesus and God and the rest, and not through the Catholic salvation by works, by doing the rituals of confession and communion and so on, but instead through salvation by character, through our actions, through our lives, through our spiritual symphony. That was 200 years ago. These days, we who are Unitarian Universalists, I think we now believe in something we might call, well, salvation by love. Salvation by love. We think that if we let love be our guide, if we stand on the side of love, if we are filled with the spirit of immortal love, forever full, if we keep on to that place where there is more love, then we'll find salvation. We'll make the world better, and we'll have lives we can be proud of. We'll be saved. Saved from what exactly? We're not totally sure, or at least not in agreement. That's kind of the sticky part, but we'll be saved by love. This is our prime value, to be a people of love. And love as a theological virtue is an orienting principle. It's a good one. I've got no problem with it, really. Love's fine. Love God with all your heart, all your mind, and your strength. And love your neighbor as yourself. This is the sum of the commandments. It's good stuff. Love this beautiful world, the lights in the trees and the wonder everywhere. The letter fails, but eternal love remains. Sounds great. It's good stuff. But here's the problem with salvation by character or salvation by love. Here's the little problem. We don't always have great character. We're not always people of love. We don't always love as much or as well as we could or should. We don't always love what is worthy. Sometimes we love things we know we shouldn't. We don't always have good character. We don't always love. Sometimes, in other words, we are sinners. That's right, I said it in a Unitarian church, sinners. The building has not fallen down yet. We sin. When I told David Kramer that my title for his ordination would be Saints and Sinners, he asked, and which one am I? So I love that when I told Bob the topic, he wondered the same thing. Which one am I? As if we have to ask. We are both at once. Of course we are. Saints and sinners wrapped up in one body and one mind and one soul. You and me, lay people, ministers too, we're no more saints and no less sinners than anyone else, I assure you. In some areas of life and faith, we recognize this reality quite clearly. We know that we are not perfect and that we are embedded in systems of power and privilege, systems in which we participate knowingly and unknowingly. We're particularly clear about this, I think, after a long struggle when it comes to racial justice. Those of us who are white know, even if we wish to deny it sometimes, we know that racism is a virus which we have caught, and we must fight against it within ourselves, that we must make an effort to be anti-racist, because otherwise, and even when we do try sometimes, otherwise we will behave in ways that extend the system of racial oppression. Likewise, I think we know this about ourselves when it comes to economic justice and environmental sustainability. We know that the complete saint, the perfect, earth-loving justice maker would eat only from their own garden, walk everywhere, use no carbon at all, only shop at fair trade farmer markets while listening to NPR. We know that. And we try, we really do try, but we are not perfect and we're not gonna be. There are trade-offs and sacrifices. We try, but we know that we sin, that we do not treat the workers far away, unseen in some other country, making the things that we own and use, and we do not treat the earth, our only home, as well as we should or we could. We know it. We sin. We have also come, I think, more and more to understand how important this awareness that we are bound up in systems of violence and oppression, in principalities and powers, how important this is with respect to humility and empathy. We know that when it comes to these things that we are not perfect. So we might try to help each other learn more, but we are getting better about not using shame to bludgeon each other on these matters. We're getting better at it. This is one temptation, of course, whenever we talk about saints and sinners, to think that we are the saints and to attack the sinners, those other people. And we may say, oh no, we are Unitarians, we don't do that. Yes, we do. Yes, we do. We are the heirs to the Unitarian tradition that believed, as Thomas Starr King said, that we were too good to be damned, just as much as we are the heirs of the Universalists who knew God was too good to damn them. And we have preached and sometimes still do the work, we have practiced and sometimes still do and preached it too, the work of shaming those we consider sinners to make ourselves feel better. And we have practiced and sometimes still do the liberal firing squad. You know the liberal firing squad? You make a circle. We are, I think, growing out of that phase. At least I pray that we are. We are more humble. We know that we are each good and evil, high road and low road, trying and stumbling, saint and sinner, both at once. Maybe we are starting to do what we always told the religious right that they should do, love the sinner, ourselves, each other. That doesn't mean that everything goes or out in the world or in the walls of the church. It doesn't mean that there are no limits to behavior. As we know all too well, there are things we do not permit without consequence. Sins too great to be allowed and sinners too unrepentant who have forfeited their place in the covenant of the church, and in some cases, their right to be a free citizen of the Republic. But these are the exceptions. Generally, we recognize that we each make mistakes, and we try not to judge too harshly. We have learned to talk about our imperfections, our mistakes, even if we don't call them sins. But it's okay to call them sins. It really is. One can speak of sin without it being original. It's okay. For all my talk earlier about big social questions, economic and ecological justice, the truth is that the sins, the struggles, the pains and the hurts, which bring people to church and send them away, which each of us, human beings, all of us, wrestle with in the night and sometimes in the bright of day. The sins which trouble our souls most are far more personal. We've not always been so good about grappling with them as we have with the wider social questions. These sins, these troubles, are about how we treat ourselves and each other, about the unhealthy lusts and distractions, about the temper we can't always keep, the addiction that holds us captive, the envy, the resentment, the self-doubt, the thing we did once or more than once and we regret, the pain we caused in another for our own gain, the neglect of our friendships or our spiritual lives, the time we cheated to get ahead, or at least not fall further behind, the time we chose the least bad option, but it still feels awful, the time we were not of good character, the time we were not guided by love. This isn't other people. This is us, here in this room. You here, me up here, just as much as everybody else, just as much. I remember a conversation a long time ago, it was seminary, and we were reading Paul's letter to the Romans, talking about conscience and freedom. And we got to Romans 7:14, where he writes, "For we know that the law is spiritual, but I am of the flesh, sold into slavery under sin. I do not understand my own actions, for I do not do what I want, but I do the very thing that I hate. I know that nothing good dwells within me, that is, in my flesh. I can will what is right, but I cannot do it." And one of our classmates spoke of how addiction is exactly like this. We will, we wish to do otherwise, but cannot do it. And each of us, whether we have faced addiction or not, has sometimes felt like this, right? We will, but we cannot do it. And yet, theologically, we reject this dualism between body and spirit, between flesh and soul. That is not the way that we see it. We are much more likely to find resonance with those beautiful words from Mary Oliver's poem, Wild Geese. You do not have to be good. You do not have to walk on your knees for 100 miles through the desert, repenting. You only have to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves. It is our witness, our testimony, our conviction that our deepest impulses are for good, that love runs in our veins, that we were born right the first time. And I remain committed to that proposition, and I do not wish to challenge it. I believe that we were born good, but not perfect. It's too easy an out to just say, let the soft animal of your body love what it loves, as if it were that simple, as if we don't screw up, as if we don't forget who we are supposed to be, as if sometimes we get dealt a bad hand and have to make the best of it, as if we don't sin. It is not our deepest nature to do what we should not do. It is not our corrupted flesh or our twisted heart. It's just finitude. It's just real life. And ministry and religion lives in the place where our inner saint and our inner sinner dance together and live together and struggle and are at peace together and go down to the river to pray together. We might wish that we spent our lives on the river, in our kayak, catching the lights in the tree and the wonder of it all and feeling at peace in nature, but just as much we live in the newspaper editor's office, reading out the latest tragedy over the wires, pain and loss and corruption and petty-mindedness. So we could say that ministry and religion is between the river and the newsroom, but of course that's too simple. For nature, as Tennyson said, is red in tooth and claw, just as much as it is glowing in beauty and wonder. And the paper publishes stories of heroism and compassion and hope, not just misery and loss. It's all around us, everywhere, all the time. We are called then to come alive to the fullness of life, to our wonder and our pain, our greatness and our meanness, our goodness and our sin, to preach the full story, to forgive ourselves and each other, for we will screw up sometimes, to build and live in religious communities and have ministries and lives where we help people, ourselves included, grapple with their sins so that we might live our best life with mercy and love, and not damnation or shame, but honesty. People need us to be real, to wake and live not in denial of these truths, but walk together through the journey, all of it, to be compassionate and prophetic at once. Yes, to love the sinner, which is us and one another as real people. And yes, to rejoice that the holy God, for some of us, spirit, life itself, is love. Love larger than our sins, however enormous they might feel to us in the moment. Immortal love larger than our sins. That our story is never over. That we can be saved. Salvation by love in the end. Yes, salvation by love. Even though we do not love perfectly all the time. Salvation by love because it is not our love that saves us. It isn't. It's the love of each other. The love of the earth announcing our place in the family of things, and the love of what is beyond our names, the spirit of life, which sustains us and loves us in our coming and our going and all the days of our lives. May this be our symphony. Let's sing together. It's 298 in your gray hymnal, Wake Now My Senses. I invite you to rise in body or spirit. Please be seated. It has been wonderful to be together for worship this morning. In your bulletin, you'll find some events and things that are coming up. In particular, I want to highlight our Spirit Journey groups, which start again in September. Now is the time to sign up. We have a number of different times we're offering throughout the week that meet once a month, a group of 8 to 12 people to gather and go deeper together into your spiritual lives and to build those connections. So please do sign up. It's the main way we connect with each other in that smaller setting. So take a look at that. That's on the table, as a bunch of other activities are as well. In a moment, we'll take up an offering to support the work of justice and mercy in the world. 80% of what's collected today will go toward the Unitarian Universalist Association and their work for justice and mercy and to build up our congregations. Thank you for your generosity. If today was your first day with us, we're especially glad to have you here. If you didn't check in on your way in at the table, please do so on your way out. Next week, I'll be preaching a sermon, What is Unitarian Universalism? Every August, sometime, I preach that kind of intro sermon. It's always a good reminder. If you've been coming for 90 years, you'll learn something. But it's a great day to bring a friend to church who's been thinking about coming. So bring someone along with you. We'll also be doing a blessing of the backpacks. So you can bring your child can bring a backpack. If you got a briefcase or whatever, a bag you take to work, bring that too. That's fine. But before school starts, some people have already started. But for most folks, we're going to do a blessing of the backpack. So have your family and friends and children and grandchildren come and bring their backpacks with them. And the offering will now be given and received. I'll extinguish our chalice, but not the light of truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. These things we carry with us until we are together again. While I do that, I invite you to rise and invite your spirit. Join hands, if you wish, with the person near you for our benedictions. The words of our spoken benediction are attributed to Saint Francis. Where hate rules, let us bring love. Where sorrow, joy. Let us strive more to comfort others than to be comforted, to understand others than to be understood, to love others more than to be loved. For it is in giving that we receive, and in pardoning that we are pardoned. We'll sing together our sung blessing. Go your way in peace.